30 years ago, 40 years ago, men like Guy Woods, Gus Nichols, Thomas Warren, Franklin Camp were what I considered to be the stalwarts of the faith. If I needed some help in understanding something, I usually went to books that had been written by men like that, and I had the opportunity to hear all of those men. Brother Warren was the one that debated the atheist at least twice. All those men have died. And frankly, as we lost those men, I entertained the thought, are we going to have anybody in the generation that's growing up now to be in a position like men like that were? I think that I have seen in the last few years something happening and continue to see that gives me more faith in the future than most anything. Isaac mentioned the one who's going to be preaching in the meeting at Independence this week, Justin Rogers, and made some rather unusual statements about his abilities, and I agree with him. In addition to Justin Rogers, we have Doug Burleson, we have Matt Cook, we have Kirk Brothers, we have Jesse Robertson. There's five young men. Jesse's just a little bit older than the others, and then a little older than that, we have Mark Blackwelder, and perhaps just a few years old, not too much older than that, we have men like David Powell that many of you know. All of those are Bible professors at Freed Hardeman. And they're all preaching in the area. Justin Rogers is preaching at Christian's Chapel over in Henderson County. Doug Burleson is preaching at Scott's Hill. Matt Cook is preaching along with his father down in McNary County. I think Kirk Brothers is preaching at Bethel Springs, at least in that area. Mark Blackwelder and Jesse Robertson are both preaching at Estes, sharing the pulpit. David Powell is preaching at North Jackson. I am very, very much encouraged by these young men. They're young men that I wouldn't hesitate to go to today for answers. I don't have the background in Greek and Hebrew as people like Justin Rogers has. And I wouldn't hesitate to go to those younger men today and ask them for help in some of these areas. In fact, we have a young man in our own midst that I wouldn't hesitate to go to and ask for some help in Greek and some things like that. Isaac has a background in education that I don't have. And I am so appreciative that we have young men like this coming along, and it gives me faith in the future of the church. I just wanted to say that to you because we have a lot of things happening today that discourage us. There are a lot of things that happen in many of the Christian colleges that discourage me, and Freed Hardeman's not perfect. They don't listen to me on everything. But I see a lot of things happening in the Brotherhood that are encouraging at the same time that I see some of those things that are discouraging. And mentioning the word discouraging, you remember the song that included the words gloom, despair, and agony on me? I think that's part of the song. If I didn't have bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. I could very easily allow myself to live with that kind of attitude. When I turn on the news and look at Fox News and CNN and MSNBC, going from conservative to liberal to ridiculous, I see so many things reported that cause me to really wonder what's happening to this world. When you see people beheaded, and we've almost gone to the point of seeing that ourselves, and some have seen it. And this past week, a woman beheaded in a market. We don't know the details of that yet. When you realize that any of these things could happen at any time, when you look at the crime that's taking place, I quit listening several years ago to the news stations in Memphis because everything on those stations had to do with shootings and crime that was taking place in Memphis, northern Mississippi, and over in Arkansas. And I decided I didn't need to be too concerned about that part of the world, so I quit listening. But folks, I'm not for sure how long I'm going to be listening to the station in Jackson. Every time I turn on the news, I can tell you at least the first three items on it will be a shooting or a killing in Jackson. Right in our own midst, a lot of things are happening. When I look at my friends, and when I look at our families, and when I look at the communities where we live, when I look at the church, there's so many things that are discouraging. But there's that verse in Hebrews 6:19, which says, which hope we have as an anchor for the soul. I'm sure that most of us have had the experience of being out on a lake or body of water and the waves begin to roll, or having difficulty controlling where we're going, and we have an anchor that we can drop down and it will take hold and keep the boat from moving in any direction. We have that anchor in times of difficulty. And we need to remind ourselves, perhaps more often than we do, that we have that anchor. With all the discouraging things, the gloomy things that happen, the despair that might come, there's always that word hope. And he says it is the anchor of the soul. There are three verses in this sixth chapter of Hebrews that mention the word hope. I want us to look at those three verses and look at some of the terms that are used in describing that, and take heed to it and listen to it to develop a better attitude ourselves in life as we live in times of difficulty. Going back to the 11th verse, he says, we desire that every one of you do show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope unto the end. And then in verse 18, that by two immutable things in which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us. Which hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, and which entereth into that within the veil. Folks, in those three verses, we have at least six different concepts associated with the subject of hope. If we can understand those and believe in them, can have an effect upon our lives, especially upon our continued development of faith and our continued development of being able to face each day and believe that everything is going to work out in the right way for those that love the Lord. First, look at verse 11 and notice the word assurance. The same diligence to the full assurance of hope unto the end. We have assurance. Sometimes in some of our relationships in life, we don't have much assurance. We find people who are not trustworthy. We deal with people on a regular basis who will not keep their promises, who will not pay their debts. And sometimes we sort of feel like there's nothing there that gives us an assurance in life. And yet he says we have this assurance in hope. 1 Peter 1:3 calls it a lively hope. Acts 17:31 says God has given us assurance through his Son that he's raised from the dead. 1 Corinthians 15, especially verses 13 through 20, talk about the resurrection and show that our faith and our lives and everything that we do would have no meaning if it were not for the resurrection of Jesus. But in that resurrection, the fact that Jesus came back from the dead gives us hope and gives us the assurance that everything is going to work out all right. In Proverbs, the 14th chapter, verse 32, the righteous have hope in his death. Even as you and I come to the point of facing death, and in the case of many of us, we will know that death is just around the corner, we can have hope. We can have assurance. And when we face death on the part of loved ones and friends, we can have hope. I have the responsibility many times to stand by the bedside with the family as a person draws that last breath. And to be able to say to that family, if the one who is in the process of passing is a faithful Christian, this is not the end of it. This is not a time of despair. This is really the time that a Christian lives for. To be able to die in the Lord is something that gives assurance. And I think I'm able to give people assurance, not because of me, but because of what's taught in God's Word and the promises that God has given, even at a time like that. And when I stand by the graveside as we're getting ready to lower that body into the earth, and the one who's lived in that body is a faithful Christian, I can look that family squarely in the eye and say, there is assurance. God has given us assurance. And that's what he means when he says we have that the righteous hath hope even in his death. But go down to verse 18 and look at the word consolation. That we might have a strong consolation. The word Barnabas in Acts 4 is said to mean son of consolation. A study of the life of Barnabas would help us to understand what that word means. Barnabas was an encourager. He was one who was always trying to lift people up and help people to do the right thing. And in that same sense, in this passage, he's saying the hope that we have, the hope with which we live, gives us consolation. It gives us encouragement. Sometimes you and I go to bed at night facing some disappointments in life, knowing that even the next day there may be some disappointments. Maybe sometimes we know specific things that are going to happen. But we can have that encouragement and we can have that consolation if we have our lives anchored with hope. That's what he's saying here. I think he's also saying in this word consolation that there's a possibility for peace of mind. Philippians 4:7 says, the peace of God, or peace of mind that passeth all understanding, shall keep us and keep our minds in the right way. It is possible, even in the difficult times, even in times of gloom and despair and agony, to have a foundation that can keep us strong and keep us believing in what is right and give us a sense of peace of mind. Somebody said, God is in his heaven and all's right with the world. That's not true. The second part of that's not true, but the first part of it is. God is in his heaven, and all things will be right for those who trust in him. Because we can have that peace of mind that passeth all understanding, even in the scene of talking about the grace of God and what it does in Titus 2, 11 through 13, he says, looking for that blessed hope. What would life be if we didn't have that hope? We would not have the encouragement and the peace of mind. Then further in that verse, notice something else that he says. Having a strong consolation who have fled for refuge. For refuge. To lay hold upon the hope that is set before us. That word refuge is used a lot in the Psalms. I think at least 18 times in the Psalms. Usually is referring to God as our refuge. In talking about the four wise little creatures in Proverbs 30, he said the conies, or the rock badgers, they find their safety and their refuge in the rocks. He said they're a feeble folk, but as long as they're in the rocks, they're protected. And they're safe from the prey that would come upon them. That's sort of what he's saying here. That we have the protection in God from that would come upon us. And even as Jesus said, if someone were able to take our lives, that we still cannot lose our souls because of the evil and the difficulties that are in the world. Put yourself in the process of that woman that was beheaded this week, that 54-year-old woman. Put yourself in the place of those people in the store in Memphis just a few days ago that were injured because someone came in, just started shooting and started attacking them, one in the parking lot. Put yourself in the place of driving up into Walmart parking lot here in Jackson, and all of a sudden someone comes up and literally kills you. That can happen. But nobody can take your soul from you. We have the refuge in God and the hope that we have in Him, that no matter what happens, that we have that protection that cannot be found anywhere else. Then look in verse 19 where he says that hope is the anchor of the soul. And notice the words that he used to describe that, both sure and steadfast. He said our hope is something that is sure. The idea of that word carries with it the idea of nailing something to the wall. It's nailed to the wall. It's sure. It's there. It's steadfast. That's the kind of hope that we have. Nobody can take it from us. We can give it up, but nobody can take it from us. Jesus said in Hebrews 13:5, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. And in verse 8, Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now that's something that's sure. We don't have many things in life that are sure. Friend of mine lives pretty close to me the other day, found out that there had been 3 withdrawals from his bank account. He had his money in the bank, thought that was sure, that was protected. He had a checkbook that he could use it when he needed it, but it's protected even by the government with an insurance there, and that bank protects it. It wasn't protected. We don't know yet exactly how it came about. I know part of it involved. He's been involved in giving some answers to what I believe is a scam. And I think that people in that type of situation are able to get information when we don't even think they can get it. But anyway, he thought he had his money in the bank and it was sure. And when he checked, it was gone. We have very few things in this life that are sure. Someone said death and taxes. I've added a third one, death and taxes, and that stoplight at FE right corner down yonder. It's going to be red when I go through. There's 3 things you can count on, but not many other things are sure. But our hope is sure. And then he says it is steadfast. His word is settled in heaven, Psalms 119:89. It is forever settled. It is steadfast. His promises are steadfast. He tells us to be steadfast and unmovable in 1 Corinthians 15:58. And the reason for that is the conclusion of what's in that entire chapter, that because of the resurrection of Jesus, we have these promises, even that death cannot wind up as a victor, and a few verses before that, but that we have the victory in Jesus Christ. Why? Because our hope is steadfast. It is nailed down. It cannot be taken away from us. And then in the latter part of verse 19, he says that our hope really gives us access to God. Notice what he says, which entereth into that within the veil. Veil there, no doubt, is talking about the veil that was between the holy place and the most holy place in the temple or the tabernacle. And the most holy place represented the presence of God. And the high priest could only go in there once a year to represent the people into that most holy place. But he says there's going to be a time when we can enter in. Jesus was our high priest in the next verse, he says, but there's that entering into that within the veil, meaning that we have the hope that we can live with God in heaven when this life is over. And I don't know of anything else that's more important than that. When we're living in difficult times, when we see all the crime and the gloom and the agony and despair that's around us, we have that hope that's the anchor of the soul, and one of the reasons is it means to us that we believe that we can wind up in heaven with God no matter what happens here on earth. Let me add one other verse that's not in this chapter that I think is important, and that's Romans 12:12, where he simply makes the statement, rejoicing in hope. It would be easy to be sad today in this world. It would be easy to spend our time with the corners of our mouths turned down and perhaps even tears being shed. But we don't have to do that, because we can rejoice in hope. When the eunuch was baptized, he went on his way rejoicing. When the Philippian jailer was baptized, he came back into the house with his family rejoicing. And Paul again and again says, I rejoice in you and you can rejoice in me. We can even rejoice in each other because of our relationship in the kingdom of God. Rejoicing in hope. We basically have just noticed what's in one chapter today. Three verses of that chapter. Where in one of those verses he says that we have hope as an anchor of the soul. It gives us assurance. It gives us consolation. It gives us a refuge. It is sure. It is steadfast. And it gives us that opportunity to eventually enter inside the veil to the most holy place and be with God for an eternity in heaven. There's nowhere else that you can find that hope except in God and in Christ. There's nowhere else that you can find that anchor of the soul. But if you are a Christian and you're living as a faithful Christian, not perfect, but faithful, holding on to Christ and the forgiveness that comes through His blood, you can live each day feeling that your life is anchored, not in this world, not in the worth of this world, not in the affairs of this world, but in Jesus Christ, the Son of God, where we can have the anchor of the soul. If you've not been baptized into Christ to receive remission of sins, you're still wandering around on the waves of the sea and you don't have that anchor. Or if you've become a Christian and you're not living the Christian life and you're just wandering around, you don't have that anchor. But you can have it if you'll just do what God has told you to do. If you need to be baptized, need to come asking for prayers. Come as together we stand and sing.